radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to Question Reality.
Question Reality.
With Priscilla Leona.
Priscilla Leona.
Only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Question Reality. I am your host, Priscilla Leona, and we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, California. And our show is broadcast every Sunday from 5 p.m. to 5:50 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Now, if this is your first time tuning in, our show will help you to question your career reality. This show is for you if you were, are, or might be considering a career in the entertainment industry. Our guests will provide advice, tips, resource information on how and what it takes to successfully pursue a career in show business. And our guests work in various professions of entertainment, so that means that we will definitely have someone on the show sooner or later from a career that you are interested. If you want to check out our past guests, read their bios, listen to their bio instantly, or download one of the shows, go to the LA Talk Radio website, latalkradio.com, and click on the link at the top of the website that says Channel 1. Scroll down, look for the graphic of our show, Question Reality, and click the link. And this takes you directly to our archive page, and you can view a list of the past guests. Now, also, our shows are available for download on iTunes under the podcast section. So you just type Question Reality in the search box, and all of the shows will come up from 2008, and we're still going strong. Yay, yay, yay. If you want to find out about our future guest, we are booked until July, and you can go to our official Question Reality website, and that is questionrealityshow.com, questionrealityshow.com. As always, we have a person on the show that is going to help you if you are pursuing a career as a comedian. We are going to talk, some of the discussion topics that we're going to talk about today is how to determine if you are if you're better at being a stand-up comedian, a sketch comedy comedian, or a sitcom comedian. And we'll also talk about the right steps to take to get you on the path to becoming a comedian. How many times have we said that? Her name is Brenda Kalana. She is a comedian and an actress. And from what I hear from Mara Merrick, she is a very, very funny, funny person. So we're expecting her to give jokes galore today. No pressure. And we will be meeting her in a couple minutes. And I want to tell you first, we're going to start off with the wonderful workshops around town. We have four of them for you today. And let's start off. They're all for they are all for a website called trulyacting.com, trulyacting.com, trulyacting.com. Yes. And the first one is going to be this Tuesday, March 20th, starting at 7 o'clock. It is $55, and it is going to feature Sarah Isaacson. She is a full casting director with the famous April Webster Casting. Sarah is currently the co-casting director for Fringe and also Alcatraz. She has worked on series television for over 12 years and at many offices, including John Levy Casting, which had ER, The West Wing, Third Watch, and she was the manager of casting for Lifetime Television for 2.5 years. And then she took a brief hiatus from casting, and then she went back to work for Michael Green and Associates as a theatrical agent. And over the course of 12 years, she has also cast many web series, short films, music videos, plays, and indies movies. So if you want to check her out, go to imdb.com, and her name is Sarah Isaacson, Isaacson. So if you want to take a class at Truly Acting this Tuesday with her, $55 will get you in the door, and you can do your thing in front of Miss Isaacson. On Wednesday, March 21st, starting at 7 p.m. Oh, also, I forgot. I don't know if I said the time. 7 o'clock for Sarah Isaacson. Also, the next day, Wednesday the 21st, starting at 7 o'clock, for $45, you can stretch your stuff in front of Jennifer Lehrer. She is a full casting director with Cami Patton Casting. writing. And as an associate, Jennifer worked on Pushing Daisies. I was on that show. I actually took a workshop with Jennifer Lehr about five or seven years ago. And she was very, very nice. Very nice person. She does Q&As, so you can get a lot of your questions answered. Basically, all casting directors do the Q&As. Some of them let you do more questions than others, but she did let everyone get a question in and encouraged it. She also went over headshots and gave tips and pointers on that. But she was an associate who cast for Pushing Daisies. I was on that show. She also cast for King of Queens and The Practice. And as a full casting director, she cast for Las Vegas, the show with the hot Josh Duhamel, who was my fantasy man for all the seasons that this show was on. Also for Knight Rider. And due to the policies of the office Jennifer works for, we can't tell you the name of the show that she's working on right now, but we can tell you currently Jennifer is the casting director for the Braverman or Braverman family on NBC's 1 hour. It's a 1 hour show about family and relationships. I haven't seen it yet, but heard it was pretty good. So you can also check her out on IMDb.com. Saturday, March 24th, starting at 1:30, $45. Manny Fernandez with Mary Jo Slater casting. And you know Mary Jo Slater has been around forever. Huge. This is open to teens and adults. And Manny is the associate too and has been with Mary Jo Slater casting for 4 years. And prior to that, he spent another 3 years in management. And currently, they're working on a new TNT mid-season show with Eric McCormick. He's hotter than hot. Yes, he is. And several feature films. And you can check out Manny Fernandez and Mary Jo Slater, of course, on IMDb. But this is definitely someone you'd want to get in front of as well. And the very last one I wanted to tell you about is Christine Cirolo, formerly Cesaris. She is with the lovely Rick Milliken casting. I actually auditioned for him for an episode of Bones. Yes. And I was too cute for the part. I don't know what the problem was. I didn't get the damn thing. But he is a sensational, fabulous man. And he is having a representative again, Christine Cirolo, Wednesday, April 4th, 7:30, $45. Now it starts, the class starts on April the 4th. And I think it's going to be an ongoing thing. I'm not real sure on that. They didn't give me enough details. Christine has been working in casting since 2002, and her previous credits include Arrested Development, Still Standing, Shark, Melissa and Joey, and of course, Bones. So you can also check her out on IMDb. But these are fantastic workshops. So if you are an actor and you are not getting in front of these people, you're probably not being cast as much as you want to. So the goal of an actor is to be able to get in front of these top casting people. So that is what you need to do. Yes, it is going to cost you money, but it takes money to make money. Yes, it does. So save up your coins and be able to go to casting director workshops to further your career. So listen every week for more, because I do pick out the best ones that they send me and I bring them to you. Okay, let's get back to our guest today, my darling Brenda Kalana. I'm just going to tell you a little bit about her. Brenda is a New York native who you may recognize from Comedy Central's The Showbiz Show with David Spade. And Brenda attended Marymount Manhattan College in New York, where she studied theater and acting, and she's been performing stand-up comedy for 4 years, or probably longer now, I'm not sure, in Los Angeles and New York. And she currently resides, of course, in Los Angeles, where she performs nightly throughout Southern California at all the comedy clubs she can get her hot little feet into. And she's also appeared as the voice of Steve Shrimpas, or Sherpas, didn't want to call him Shrimpa. He's very dangerous. Sharippa's mother in Fox's talk show pilot, The Steve Sharippa Show. So without further ado, let's talk to Brenda Kalana. Brenda, have I put you to sleep? Are you still there?
No, I'm completely entertained. I'm going to take every single workshop and I'm motivated and excited.
Well, that I've done my job. They probably are good. One of us is going to make $45 today.
You sure have. You cost me about $1,000 in casting workshops in about 10 minutes.
There you go. Well, you got to take them to get to know them. Okay, so
that's right.
Let's talk about, I always start the show with the same question, which is, how did little Brenda Kalana come to be a stand-up comedian or a comedian? When you were little, what did little Brenda Kalana want to do when she grew up?
I would say I always wanted to be a comedian. I didn't start until very late. I had to do it for 5 years. But I think I would say it's just being funny, you know? It's like it's being funny when you're with your friends. It's not being very good in school and being the class clown and having the whole classroom laugh at you and going, this feels right to me, you know? And going through those things in your life with your friends and as a teenager and with your family, and then you get addicted to that laughter. Next thing you know, you're in front of a whole crowd of people doing that same thing, saying, this feels right.
So when you were little, you were one of those class clowns. Is that what you're telling us?
Yes. Unfortunately, I lacked in education because I was too busy standing on desks and hiding in closets.
Oh, my God. What the heck? I tell you, I went through school, and we never actually had a class clown, and I'm envious. I did not get any classes with a class clown, and I always wanted one. I guess there was not a funny person in the place in my school, but I always wanted to know what one actually did in person.
I was in this Italian class. I think I was maybe in seventh grade, and you just play pranks. You just play pranks to get attention because you can't pay attention to what's going on in front, you know? Like I said, this one teacher, she used to go and keep her grade book in the closet. And so before she'd come into the classroom, I would hide in the closet. And the whole class, that was the best. That was where the funny was, because it was the anticipation that the whole class knew I was in the closet. And they all know that she was going to go back there and get the book. And so, you know, I'm sitting there. I'd be in there for like the first 10 minutes while she's doing her introduction, giggling and trying not to breathe real loud. And then she'd walk back and open the door, and I'd come out screaming and there's the joke. And that was enough to fulfill me for the next day.
Enough to fulfill you. I'm sure the teacher was fulfilled too and was dreading the next day. So you turned out okay. So should parents not be concerned when their child has the same similar behavior that they're being the class clown, because it could turn out to be a beautiful thing? Or should they immediately shove them off to the doctor and get them on Ritalin?
Well, what does okay mean? That's first. I don't know. I'd be classified as being okay.
Well, just pretend you're okay.
You know, I can ask this question, actually. And I think that when you see somebody trying to, you know, I wish I'd gone to one of those, like, fame schools where you got to be creative, and you got to, you know, express yourself in those ways. I found myself always needing to be creative. And it's funny enough because, like, when I was about 27, I was diagnosed with ADD and ADD and dyslexia, which is why school was very, very hard for me. So I always needed an outlet to be doing something else. So I would say if somebody saw their child behaving like that, put them in acting classes. Let them be able to express themselves in a way that they feel that's necessary, because that's all it really is.
Yeah.
You know, put them in acting classes, put them in stand-up classes, let them be directors, let them paint, let them do what they need to do to be, you know, to express themselves, because they're feeling a need for that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you're lucky enough to have parents that see that and think that that's something that's super fantastic, if you have artistic parents, if you have crazy ass parents, then they're going to rush you off to the doctor and say, oh my God, there's something wrong with my kid, and get them on the medication that I understand that takes away from the natural creativity of children who are artistic. So
that's true, and adults. I should probably be on a lot of medication too, but
well, comedy is your medication. So let me ask you, Brenda. So you basically you kind of knew without knowing that you wanted to do something where you could perform as a child. So why don't you take us through your life? What happened when you decided, that's it, I'm going to become a comedian? What steps did you take to what was the very first steps that you took on your path to becoming a comedian?
Well, I remember when Comedy Central was just comedy at the time, and they would just show one-hour specials, and that I felt like was just the best thing since sliced bread. And I saw that, I was like, whoa, this is fantastic. And I remember watching Ellen DeGeneres, and I remember the bit that inspired me to do comedy. She had this bit where she was talking about how when you trip and how stupid you feel, and it was an act out when she was running, and she fell, and then, or she was walking, and she fell, and she just said, oh, I'm just going to start running anyway. I was planning on doing that. And I thought that was the funniest thing in the world. I was like, wow, I want to do that. I want to be able to express a moment that I experienced that I find funny, and I want to tell other people. And so I tried to do stand-up, and I failed miserably, and I got really scared. And so then I said, I'm going to be an actress. And then I went to acting school, and I went to Gateway Playhouse in Bellport, New York. I did that, and I was in high school plays. And then I went to Marymount Manhattan College, where I got a scholarship to go to school, and I was performing acting. But I always had this, like, funny thing. Like, you know, at Marymount, we studied Stanislavski and a lot of just traditional, like, you know, we do scenes from Beckett and I can't even remember, but just really serious stuff like Doll's House and things like that, and stuff I just didn't feel right doing. So I started writing sketch just to kind of get that funny out. And then I was thinking I wanted to write Saturday Night Live, and then I saw that as Pigeonholed. So I was like, well, maybe I want to write for sitcoms. So I moved to Los Angeles. I started writing sitcoms, and then I worked on the show, this show, and I worked on another show called Wild and Out with Nick Cannon. And then I realized I wanted to do stand-up, which is the first thing I wanted to do in the beginning. So I ended up taking a full circle, trying everything, and going back to doing stand-up.
Oh, okay. Oh, I'm sorry. You know, I was just wondering, we have such a, I don't think we have a good connection, because you're cutting in and out. Now, I don't know if that's happening on the other end, but it's very hard to hear you. It's like I hear every other word. I want to apologize to the audience if they're experiencing the same thing. So I'm not sure when you stop, because there's an echo and stuff. So I don't know what's happening. But
Is that better? I took my earpiece out. Is that better?
Yeah, I hear you much better now. That's good. Okay. Yeah, 'cause you were kind of fuzzy, and then you were cutting in and out, and I'm thinking, oh my God, I hope people aren't listening to this. Okay, let's get back. So you thought you wanted to do stand-up. You tried different things, and then you end up going back to the very first thing that you thought that you wanted to do.
Yeah, which I think is important, because you have that little voice inside of you that says, you know, I want to do this. And then you have like that other judgmental voice on top of you that says, no, no, you can't do that. You know, but deep down inside, there's a little voice that goes, no, no, you want to do this. And it took me 5 years to go around and try everything, not to listen to that voice, the little voice that says, no, you want to make people laugh. You want to get on stage. You want to do stand up. And that is that little voice that you have to maintain every time you're on stage. The original reason why you decided to tell a joke, because you found it funny, you know? So it's that little voice that you have to listen to.
Now, when you originally tried stand-up, and you say that you completely bombed, or you think you bombed, I mean, was this in your mind, or were you heckled and objects thrown at your eye? So who determined whether or not that you bombed?
I think whether or not people are laughing, I think that's the ultimate determination. I think if nobody's laughing, then you probably bombed.
That's a good indication. Okay, so you did. Everybody does. I can't imagine any comedian that went out there the first couple times and like not roared the house down, maybe except Jim Carrey. But other than that, what did you do? That must have been like a horrible experience that you had, and it would knock anybody down. What did you do to get back up on that horse? Or did you do your escape and try doing all these other things because mm-hmm. you thought that wasn't for you?
Yeah, I tried to escape because it feels real bad, you know, and you find out later once you start doing it that bombing is a part of the process. Everybody,
right.
If everybody bombs, I'm sure Jim Carrey had many nights where he bombed. And because, you know, you're trying new stuff, you try characters and you take risks. And sometimes you have to develop those characters and those risks over time. And through that, you're going to, you know, you're going to fail. I mean, that's all this is trial and error and failing. And with every fail, you learn a lesson as you know, to succeed in whatever you're trying to do. So it's an integral part, but it's also very heavy at the same time, and it's hard to learn how to just kind of shrug it off. I always say you got to take a shower, like a mental stand-up shower, and then get on stage again just to kind of wash everything from the last set off so you can get back on again.
So I've always been curious, though, because I know that people say comedians have to find their niche, find what works for them. But if you're going to, so I'm trying to find out what the secret is, because if you're going to different comedy clubs and you're doing, say you do the same skit at five different clubs, and mm-hmm. out of three of the clubs, you get a lot of laughs, but the other two, you get no laughs at all. How do you determine that it's successful? Is it because you got three out of the five? Because what if you don't get laughs with the other two? What do you write it off as? Is it regional? Is it more males than females and you're doing a certain type of jokes? Or, you know, how do you find the formula as a comedian?
I think doing it over and over again, you find the formula. I tend to try a joke out, like you said, three to five times, and I weigh out the laughs and see what feels right for me. Like I said, you got to go back at that little voice that you know, why were you telling that, and why did you find it funny, and you have to stick with the root of whatever you're doing. So if you're confident in that and you thought it was funny, it probably was pretty funny, you know, but there's also other, like, there's also other factors. Like, I mean, let's say if you're doing five shows that night, and three of them went well and two didn't, like, you know, maybe the guy that went, maybe your act is really clean and you're talking about cats and why they're funny, and the guy before you went up and he was filthy, and then you went to then try out your new cat bit and the audience had just acclimated to hearing really dirty, really edgy stuff, and now they don't want to hear about cats because the audience has been changed. So that'll be like, that'll determine whether or not your jokes work or they don't, or if the crowd was ready for you, or maybe the comedian before you got turned the crowd and he got angry and he yelled at the crowd, or she got angry and she yelled at the crowd, and then you had to go up and now you have to win them back. But those are all tools and skills that you learn from going up over and over again. It's like, you know, what's happening. It's like walking into a separate party or a separate group of people. It's like, what happens? Who are these people? Where are they from? What did they listen to before? And what are they ready for? And then what do I have to do to get them on my side? But that's a different skill rather than, you know, just determining whether or not a joke works.
That is so interesting, because so many questions popped into my mind while you were saying that, because I'm thinking, okay, I'm a beginning comedian. Should I be looking to book myself at places where I know what the other comedians are doing so that my comedy kind of fits in? Or do I choose a place where my comedy doesn't fit in and that I stand out and be unique?
I don't know if you ever know that, because every comedian is different, just like every person is different, you know? So if you get on a show and there's five comedians, they're all going to bring something different to the table, and you don't know what they're going to do that day either. So you just have to, like I said, stick true with that little voice and just do what you find funny. And if it is funny and you're able to execute that, people will laugh. You might not get the roars of laughter if the crowd is just insulted and they don't want to be there anymore. You might not get that raw, but you have to also take that into perspective too. You go, okay, this crowd's angry and they laughed and I brought them back and I did my job. You know, I brought them back to the next comedian that comes up because now they're feeling better. You know, it's just like every interact. I like to look at it like every interaction with every person, you know, but they're just a mass person that went through an experience. So I would do the same thing. If I walked into a room full of people that were just yelled at and they were upset because they went through trauma, I'm not going to then, you know, I have to massage my way in. I have to get them back. I have to make them feel good a little bit. And then maybe I'll pop a few jokes in.
So would you feel confident going up after Lisa Lampanelli?
Yeah, I would. I would probably then, if I had a choice, I would probably then do very racy jokes because they had already heard
right.
that stuff. I would probably grab, you know, every comedian, if you're doing it for a while, has like a reservoir of bits that they have and developed, and some of them are real clean and some of them are real edgy. And so if I was doing a show and I went up there, at least I'm, no, I would probably do like my more racier stuff. Rather than, I would probably,
So then you do have to acclimate your comedy bit. So you probably, in theory, if you want to do the very best job, you probably should know who the other comedians are and be a little familiar with their style so that you can choose something that maybe possibly fits the genre of the night.
I would think, but that's a lot. I mean, there's so many comedians. I would probably, what I do is I just watch whoever goes on right before me. And I go from there.
Oh,
you know,
because you have all your jokes memorized. And
yeah.
So we're learning now, people, audience members, people who want to be a comedian. So we're learning from Brenda that we need to write our jokes and memorize them and have them bullet pointed in our mind so that we know what jokes to bring on based on a comedian that went on before us to kind of make sure that everything is fitting with the crowd. Is that right?
Yeah, this is way after. I mean, that's something that'll develop in years to come. And it's good to know that you'll have to do that. I mean, before we were talking about having a certain bit and being able to try it out. And that's another thing I do. I always have a goal before I get on stage, what I'm going to do. You know, so that's a separate. If I was doing a show and I walked up and then I didn't have in my head that I was going to prepare this one, let's say that cat bit that we were talking about, I would probably then drop, if I went after Lisa Lampanelli and I was thinking that I was going to try the cat bit, I would then drop the cat bit and then do something more racy just so that I could, you know, give the audience a show and make them happy and do a good job, you know. But if I wasn't then following Lisa Lampanelli, I would probably then still, and it was still my night of five shows, I would then still try that cat bit and see how that worked.
Great. Okay. All right. So, it makes sense to me. I want to talk about what advice you would give to teens into adults that are reinventing their career. So, what advice would you give to teens who want to pursue a career as a comedian? Answer that first. And then what advice would you give a person who's either in a career right now but hates it? They're a pusher, a pencil pusher, and they hate their job, and they have always wanted to be a comedian, but they're afraid to make that transition. So let's start with the first one being the teen. What steps do they need to take in order to pursue a career as a comedian?
I think it's the same for both. I think you just have to go out and do it. I mean, there's really no way to teach how to do comedy but to do it. Everybody has their own journey. Everybody brings something different to the table, you know? Like, I might be one comedian that that is very good at talking in front of people, but I have no jokes, you know, but I'm really good at that. And maybe the person that goes up after me can't talk in front of people, but he's got great one-liners. And so everybody is in a different spot when they start, and then as they learn, they're in a different place in their journey. So I would say if I was a teenager or if I was a pencil pusher, I would just go out and do it and find out what your strengths are, what you find funny, and then every time you fail or succeed on stage, every set you learn a lesson, and then that makes you better. And every time you get on stage, you have to keep getting on stage and just keep doing it, because every time you get on stage, you just get better and better. Whether you fail or you succeed, you just get better because you learned a lesson.
But isn't there a methodology to it? I mean, don't they have to, like, write their jokes first? Isn't there, like, a step 1, 2, 3 ABC? Like, first they would write their jokes. I mean, wouldn't they have to do that first before they go up and do a stand-up comedy act at a local club? Don't they have to write them down and memorize them? So step one would be write your jokes down, memorize them. Number two, number three, practice them in the mirror in front of friends. Number four, and then book yourself. Number five, isn't that how it goes? Isn't there a methodology to that?
I mean, you could, like I said, I think it's different. I mean, maybe everybody writes jokes differently too. It's like maybe you're somebody that's really good at riffing and just kind of talking about one subject and just going off on it, and you find that you're really good at that with your friends, and then you get up on stage and you do that, and that might be your style. And then you just get up and riff, and then as you're riffing and you're in front of people, say you're at an open mic and you're riffing, and then you come up with a joke that works because you see it laugh, and you go and you write it down, and then you build those jokes. But then maybe you don't have that skill. Maybe you have the type of skill where you're really good at just setup and punches, and you write them down, and you have a whole list of them, and then you go out and you try those, and then you see if they work. So I wouldn't say there's definitely one way to do it. I think, again, it's finding that, I keep going back to the little voice, but it's about finding the little voice of what are you good at? What am I really good at? What's my strength? And then take that on stage. I think that's the best way, because if you try another person's way and it doesn't work for you, it's putting you in a place where you can get discouraged, I think.
Got it. So there are different ways. You just have to try different ways to see which way works for you.
Sure. So really, stand-up comedy is a really personal thing. And it's really personal and built around who you are. And just as much as you're putting who you are on stage in front of those people and hoping that they like you or wanting to like you or not caring that they like you, like whatever, and that has to do with however you feel, you know, in your everyday life. Maybe it's somebody who doesn't care if they like you, and then you end up saying real mean things and people laugh because you don't care. Who knows?
That's
kind of how you develop your style.
Got it.
So is it safe for me to say, yeah, write some jokes, go up on stage, see if they work? I could give somebody that process, and that's okay to say, but I don't feel like that's fair to become an artist that tells jokes. So I don't feel like it's a very organic way to do it. And I think that you'll end up finding your voice and finding out who you are and how you're perceived, which are the harder things about stand-up, quicker if you go up just trusting yourself and trusting why you want to do it and what your strengths are.
Okay, sounds good to me. So I guess people, you just have to try it. I think for me, because I guess it, my personality is that I'm extremely organized and I'm very detail oriented. So if I were to ever pursue that, which I won't be doing, but I think I would be the type that would say, okay, what would be funnier if I would think something's funny? I think I would write it down and I'd write my jokes down. Then I would get in front of the mirror and I would practice them. Then I'd practice them on my family. Then I think I would go, because then I would have the confidence that I would be executing them properly. But that works for me because that's in my nature to be organized. But I guess other people can just, like you say, riff, sort of like do improvisation. And they can go up there and just take an audience member and just make things that are funny. And that's brilliant too. So I guess it really depends what ever works for you. You have to find your own style. So I completely agree with that. You gotta do your thing and see what works for you.
Yeah, see, for me, I don't do well knowing I'm very good at just off the cuff and talking about like calling out the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
And so I'll go up with like three premises of what I want to talk about. Just premises like an idea. And like my act is shelled around being angry, so I'll just talk about things that I'm angry about or things that how I think people should be acting while I'm acting real stupid at the same time. So I'll usually come up with three ideas that I want to talk about and just go up on stage and talk about it and see what jokes come from that. Like now, because I'm insecure by nature as a person, if I was doing that in the mirror, I would then be completely insecure looking in the mirror at myself doing those jokes, because as I'm talking about what I'm mad at, I'd be looking at myself going, you're ugly. So I just think it wouldn't work for me, you know, and everybody is different.
Right. Got it. Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely different styles. So that's fascinating how, because I would think that would be the way to do it, but you brought up a completely valid point that doesn't work for everyone. And I always admire the people who can just, like, for example, my favorite comedian is Ellen DeGeneres. And you can just talk to her and she can just come up with things just right off the cuff that are hysterical and they'll have you rolling on the floor. And I think that is really, that's a true comedian right there. I mean, I think that people who write their jokes too, I mean, it's brilliant to be able to write it if it works. But I think that people who come with things naturally are the funniest type people in my book. Okay, so let's talk about this. What do you feel that in order to be a comedian, a successful comedian, do you feel that it takes certain characteristic traits? Like certain occupations require certain characteristic traits. They really do. Not everybody can do a certain thing. You really do need to possess certain characteristic traits. Like if you are the top car salesman for Ferrari, you're not going to be able to be a mortician and vice versa. So my question to you is, what 3 to 5, it's up to you, what 3 to 5 characteristic traits do you think are mandatory in order to make it as a comedian and to stay, have staying power?
That's a tough question, because there's so many people who have all the qualities no one even knows about, that aren't successful. I mean, there's people, you go to the comedy store at 10, 11, from like 10 to 2, and there's all these people that have all of those things, and yet they still, I mean, it also depends on how you're defining success, you know? As a stand-up, I think that success would be getting up, doing your job, being present in the moment, having fun, and having the audience laugh. See, to me, as a stand-up, that's a success. That's why you do it. I don't think people should do stand-up to be a success on TV. If that happens along the way, that's great. But success is making people laugh and making people have a good time and letting people get away from whatever it is that they were trying to get away from, which is why they're at a comedy club. So I would define success like that. So to be able to do that, you have to be able to do your job and be good, right? So I would say you'd have to be very motivated, because you have to get out every single night and go up. And you have to push yourself, because there's nobody pushing you. There's only a certain amount of spots per night, and there's a million and one comedians that are trying to get it. So I would say motivation is one. Two, I would say passion. To make people laugh, I think that is very important, because you have to, again, you have to keep pushing yourself. You have to, and when you bomb and you're learning by making mistakes that are very personal to you, you have to keep pushing yourself to do it and keep remembering why you're doing it. And so I'd say passion is another one. I would say authenticity is another one, because everybody wants to see somebody. Everybody brings something different to the table, and when if you could be yourself, people can see that and they like that. So I think being true to who you are and being authentic is another formula to success. And let's see, what else?
But what keeps you, do you feel that, you know, comedians are, beginning comedians, they're not known for making like a ton of money when they start out. What jobs can you take that, or should you seek out to supplement your income while you're pursuing your career as a stand-up comedian, that will not detract from your core of being a comedian, that won't stifle your artistic creativity?
You got to find yourself a rich husband or a rich wife. That's the best way to do
besides
it.
Besides doing that, besides it, I mean, are you talking like the standard bartender, waitress? Are there any jobs other than the standard, you know, bartender, waitress?
Yeah, I think that anything that you could do during the day. I think I was a personal trainer. And so that helped, because I worked for myself, so I was able to take off and get on the road whenever I could, and I didn't have to work nights, so that is a good profession. I think anything that you could do during the day that is really flexible hours, like a bike messenger, I'm sure that's pretty good.
That's good.
Maybe working at a bookstore.
Good.
It doesn't require you, but also, you know, having jobs as a stand-up comedian is very good too, because you're out and you're dealing with people, and you're getting ideas and you're getting annoyed. And when you're around people, you get annoyed, and when you're getting annoyed, you're getting this and you're getting jokes. So,
That means work for various temp services. You get the best material going from
jobs. I'll tell you what. Do you know who Maria Bamford is? She's one of my favorite comedians. If anyone has a chance to look her up, she's fantastic. And a lot of her, not a lot of material, but some of her best material is based on her being a temp and her experiences as a temp. And they're brilliant bits and they're funny. And it's because she had a day job. So
Yeah, so for people that would like to do comedy my style, which I don't have a comedy style because I'm not a comedian, but remember I was just talking about how you detail orient and write them? Well, there you go. Some 10 temp jobs, write your jokes down on your lunch break. I'm sure that you'll find some material from these freak shows that work in the corporate offices, for sure. So last question, then we're going to talk about stuff that you're working on. Last question, people ask me all the time, what are the first steps that you take in order to get up on stage to be a stand-up comedian? What do you have to send in, a tape? What does a person do to actually say that they want to go to the Ice House or the Improv? What do you do? You call
them. Well, anybody can go to an open mic. It's somebody that sets up a room, it's either a coffee house or a bar or something, and you sign a list, and there's about 30 numbers, and you sign your name up, and then you get a chance to go up and tell your jokes in front of other comedians, and hopefully other civilian people, or people that walk in and that are having comedy forced down their throat when they just expected coffee and a pie. But that's still good too. Then you practice, and then there's a whole circuit. I think if you go online, there's something called Comedy Bureau. A guy named Jake Kroger, he runs that, and it shows you all the shows that are happening in Los Angeles for the week and for the month. It also shows you all the open mics. And there's also something, I don't even know if it's online anymore. It's like, what is it called? It's like Chuckle Monkey. And that shows you all the open mics for and all the book shows for the country. So you kind of look at that first and you see what's in your area, and then you try out your jokes on open mics. And usually, if you're funny, there'll be other comedians that are booking shows that they promote, and they'll ask you to come on, and you'll make friends and with other comedians, and you'll know about the shows that are going around town. And another thing that's good to do is watch shows. So you go on you just start comedy, you go on open mics, and you go to book shows, and you see what other people are doing and what's happening, and you meet friends, and then you get on their shows. And then from there, when you're on those shows, then people who book for the clubs will be around, and they'll see you and get to talk to them, and then they could put you on promoted shows in the clubs, right? That'll probably take like 2, 3 years, 4 years maybe to get to that point. And then you could either, a lot of times the clubs have either competitions. I know that there's a club called Flappers they have in Burbank, and they have a competition called Uncle Clyde's, and you could compete. And then if you win and you get the first, second, or third place, you get to perform at the club. And that's a way to get into the club.
Well, what's the name of the club? Flappers?
That's Flappers in Burbank.
It's
Uncle Clyde's.
It's muffled. I can't hear. Is it Slappers, S-L-A-P-P-E-R-S, or Flappers?
Yeah. Slappers. The lady from the 20s that's dancing with her elbows in a knee.
Oh, Flappers, Flappers, F-L-A-P-P-E-R-S. Okay, Flappers in Burbank. Uh-huh. And just to make sure the audience heard what you said earlier, you said the website was the Comedy Bureau and...
Comedy Bureau, yes.
And what was the other one?
I think, I don't know if this exists anymore, but it was called Chuckle Monkey.
Chuckle Monkey.
Mm-hmm. Monkey,
Monkey. Yeah, I got it. Chuckle Monkey. Okay, Chuckle Monkey. So you're saying that, my God, that takes like 2, 3, 4 years? Woo!
Mm-hmm.
Boy, they are
It's sure it's different, but that's why I'm saying, passion and motivation is really important, especially in the beginning, because you're driving yourself.
Yeah.
You're driving yourself to go out every night and hit 2, 3, 4 spots, and you're usually failing. But I have to, and that's a very negative way to look at it, but the laughs that you get on, let's say, the third, fourth show are worth all of that work, which is why we all do it.
That's right. That's right. All right. So you have heard all the advice that Brenda Kalana has to give you about pursuing a career as a comedian. If you have any questions. Now, I understand, Brenda, you don't have your own website, but we can find you on Facebook. So if they just type in Brenda Kalana, people would be able to pull you up, Brenda Kalana, and we could like your page, right?
Yeah, sure. I have a website. It's being built, but it's up right now. If you went to BrendaKalona.com, you could see it. I'm on YouTube.
I'm sorry, what is it called?
It's BrendaKalona.com.
Okay, BrendaKalona, BrendaKalona.com. And you're also on Facebook under Brenda Kalona.
And also, I have a web series coming out called Creepy Caress. It's a sketch comedy that talks about taboo topics in a very surreal way. They're just like 1 minute sketches. And so that's also on Facebook, and you can join us and like our page. And we're going to be launching a Kickstarter campaign, which is crowdfunding to be able to pay for a whole production and a whole first season of the show. And we have everybody signed on for it. We have a director, we have editor, we have writers, we run the whole show as if it's a real TV show. And we have all these people that are just excited to work on it. And so we're already in production now. So we are using this crowdfunding to be able to pay these people to get this stuff out to you guys.
Well, I love the title. It's called Creepy Caress. Now, I know a lot of guys who give creepy caresses, so I'm just wondering. I dealt with creepy caress in the 80s. That actually should be a disease, creepy caress. I think it's a disease, really. But I understand it's a dark sketch web series, and it's going to premiere on the internet the next few months. And is it going to have its own website name? Is it going to be creepycaress.com?
It'll be creepycaress.com, and we're going to use the money from the Kickstarter to be able to get that going. It'll also be on YouTube. We have our own channel. Like, I have my own YouTube channel, my own personal YouTube channel. And you can look for a first sketch. It's called Lunch and Punch. It's on YouTube, and it's also on Facebook page. And you can also find us on Kickstarter.com. You can just look up Creepy Caress, and you can see what our project is about.
Yeah. Now there is another website that Kickstarter.com, for everyone who doesn't know, is a website, one of many that artists, actually anybody, can put their project up there. And it's a website where they put a designated amount that they would like to collect to pay for their project. And you can go on the website and you can donate money. And most of the time, like we had, I was executive producer of a short film recently, and we had it up there, and we would say, okay, if you donate this amount, this is what you get if you donate this amount. So we gave what's called perks. Are there any perks that you have on Kickstarter that would encourage people to go there and to donate money?
Sure. I think on Kickstarter, they call it incentives that you get if you donate. And one of the best ones that I really like is you get to be an executive producer on the show. So what we'll do is we'll send you HD copies of the sketches and have you give us notes in how you think that we'll change the sketch and ideas that you think that you could have. And you'll just function like an executive producer, which I think is a really cool incentive to give out, because I mean, the whole point of Kickstarter is having everybody be a part of it and feel a part of the creative process and feel a part of putting together the show. So getting to be a producer on the show, I think, is a really fun thing for people to do, and for, you know, people who want to get involved to actually be involved in the creative process. So I'm really excited about that one.
Yeah, just be careful, because, you know, Kickstarter does, after a certain time limit, if you don't have your goal, they just take it. Well, that's a separate conversation, but there.
No, I know. I'm very scared about that.
If you don't meet your goal, they will take all your money, girl. So there is another website that email me and I'll turn you on to that doesn't do that at all. The money you make, you keep it, and you just pay like a flat fee. So I'll turn you on to that one. But I just went to Kickstarter.com and I typed in Creepy Caress and it did not pull it up. So is there another name?
No, it should. You know what? We launch on Wednesday. It should be up and live by Wednesday. But if you go to the Facebook page and like us on the Facebook page, then you'll be informed as to exactly when it'll be out and what you'll see and how you can donate.
So go to Facebook.com and type in Creepy, C-R-E-E-P-Y, Caress, C-A-R-R-E-S-S, and like the page. And I imagine that there will be some sort of a link there where they can link to the Kickstarter after Wednesday, correct?
Right.
Yeah.
And then you can also see the sketch there, too. And we have a really fun photo shoot where we dress up like the first ladies, Jackie Kennedy and Michelle Obama, that I think everybody would be excited to see.
Well, I'm excited, Brenda. You've excited me. I'm titillated right now. I can't wait. because I would watch anything called Creepy Caress. As I love Creepy Caress. I think people, we need to get together and think of a disease. It's a creepy caress, because how many guys have caressed us in our teen years and we go, oh, that's creepy. But I'm excited to see what exactly this is about. So check it out. Brenda Kalana, go to Facebook.com, Creepy Caress. We are going to stay up with Brenda Kalana when she launches her website, BrendaKalana.com. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. We loved having you here. And thank you for all the advice to all the comedians or the aspiring comedians out there. So if you want to do it and be another Brenda Kalana, you can do it. Because if Brenda can do it, you can do it. Right, Brenda?
I think so. I think
everybody,
you should all try right now.
Everybody loves a clown, but everybody loves a comedian. So if you want to ask any questions of Brenda, go to Facebook.com, Creepy Caress, and send her a message. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We're going to have a wonderful show next week, so make sure you tune in. Thank you, Brenda, and everybody have a great day. We'll see you next week. Say goodbye to your fans, Brenda Kalana.
Bye. Thank you so much for having me.
Bye.
You're listening to Question Reality.
Question Reality.
With Priscilla Leona.
Priscilla Leona.
Only on LA Talk Radio.